Part 3. Desolation. Chapter 11. The next morning, Jeff awoke in the back seat of his Camaro with a crimp in his neck and a cramp in his thigh. Raindrops pattered against the metal rooftop of the car and streaked down the foggy windows as he shivered beneath the makeshift blanket his down vest had become. He wiped the sleepers from his eyes and sat up to survey his surroundings, groggily recollecting the events that had led him to bunk at his car in the first place. The boat fire, the icy plunge, the knockdown slap. Was it all just a bad dream? He rubbed his tender jaw and recalled the most horrific moment of all, a suicidal collision course with a willow tree, spared from a senseless demise by a last-second stay of insanity. A dangerous concoction of pity and regret had nearly cost him his life, but all he felt now was hollowness worse than a whiskey hangover, brought on by Cindy's sudden departure from his life. That was yesterday, however, and the sun had risen again, albeit hidden behind a thick layer of glowering stratus clouds. Today, the open road lay ahead with new opportunities and fresh outlooks. The Camaro's sleeping accommodations had been tight, but they were a vast improvement over the previous night's stay on cemetery grounds, and while the rain might impede his travel, it would also lower the visibility of those who might be looking for him. Such consolations fell short compared to the sting of severed friendships and a broken relationship, but those pains would fade as he built a new life, day by day. Yes, it was already a better day, he thought as he pulled the vest over his shoulders, gloomy skies notwithstanding. He climbed over the center console and slid into the driver's seat to turn the keys already dangling from the ignition switch. The tachometer jumped to idle as the engine roared to life. But the gas gauge presented the first obstacle on his journey to New Horizons, a gas tank nearly empty. The lack of fuel was only an indicator of the real problem, a lack of money. His soggy wallet spread out on the dashboard still contained $13, for although his final evening with Cindy had been a complete disaster, at least it had been free. $13 wouldn't buy enough gas to get him out of the state, but what little gas remained in the tank would get him back to Salisbury. And from there, his options were clear. Either his plan would succeed and fuel his cross-country journey, or he would only get as far as $13 of gas would take him. He stuffed the wallet into his vest pocket and shifted into gear, switching on the wipers and defroster as he drove the Camaro around the bulb of an undeveloped cul-de-sac. Once the foggy windshield cleared, he turned onto the main road back toward Salisbury, cautiously accelerating along the rain-slicked pavement and shunning the highway for back roads, with a keen eye on his mirrors for any cars following him. 20 minutes later, he began the long ascent up Archer Road, past Cindy's neighborhood to the right, continuing onward to the intersection with the eastern end of Arrow Drive. A few minutes later, he eased the Camaro onto Birch Road, returning to hurricane territory without risking detection by traveling along busy Borough Street. At the crest of a gentle hill, he passed the entrance of a church parking lot to his left, glad to see that no police cars were parked in a common hideout along the driveway. Coasting past a yellow house on his right, down the other side of the hill, he noted the flutter of the curtains in the picture window as he slowed to turn onto adjacent Poplar Street. He quickly turned into the driveway on the side of the house, driving up an incline to a garage door that was already rolling up before him. Bumble stepped back to give the Camaro room as it pulled into the vacant bay. Then he quickly rolled the door shut again, before peering out an inset window to ensure no one had seen them. Jeff shut off the motor and climbed out of the car, hustling on a beeline for the basement entrance of the raised ranch. Bumbles trotted after him.
Jeff, what's going on?
Where's Mick?
Upstairs, I think.
Jeff reached for the knob, but the door burst open to reveal Mick, bare-chested with a dry white towel slung around his neck and an unlit cigarette pinched between his fingers.
What do you want?
He asked. I need to ask you something, Jeff said. Can I come in? Mick pushed the door open and sardonically gestured him inside.
By all means.
Jeff heard a clack of billiard balls emanating from the adjacent room as he entered the basement hallway. He poked his head into the entertainment room, spotting Axel perched on a tall chair beside the pool table, while Denny lined up his cue stick for a shot. Behind them, a television glimmered from its mount against a white wall, facing a reclined sofa chair that obscured all but the shoes of its occupant. "Hey," Jeff said with a half-hearted wave. Denny shot a glance at Mick.
Hey, Jeff,"
he said before striking the cue ball and missing his shot. The reclining chair swiveled about to reveal Crazy Legs, dressed in a gray nylon running suit and matching running shoes.
"Jeff, I figured you were long gone by now."
Jeff stepped into the room. "This is my last stop." Axel leaned over the pool table and pointed a stick at the cue ball.
"What for?"
"Good question."
Mick followed Jeff into the room.
"Pray tell, Jeff, to what do we owe the honor of your visit? Tea won't be ready for at least an hour."
Jeff returned Mick's smirk with a deadpan glare. "Cut the bullshit. I need the bank book."
"The bank book?"
Mick lit the cigarette and sucked on it until it was glowing red. Then he exhaled a deep breath of smoke toward his feet, as if lost in thought.
"Sorry, Jeff, I can't do that,"
he finally said.
"That's the hurricane's money. And seeing as how you're no longer a hurricane, well, need I state the obvious?"
"We're not talking about your college fund, Mick. There's dirty money in that account, and my hands are just as soiled as yours. I just want my share." Bumble stepped into the doorway and scanned the tense faces about the room.
"Hey guys, what's up?"
"Jeff was just asking if he could cash out the gang savings account,"
Mick said. "Actually, it's my account," Jeff said. "I just let the gang use it."
"We have money?"
Bumbles asked.
"How much are we talking about?"
"About 1,700 bucks," Jeff said. "I'm leaving town, and I need some cash." Crazy Legs studied Jeff with a puzzled expression. Finally, he shrugged and said,
"What's the big deal? Let him have it. Let him have my share, too. I'm sure he's good for it."
"Well, shoot. He can have my share,"
Bumble said.
"I owe him more than that."
"Thanks," Jeff said. "I promise I'll pay you guys back." Mick shook his head.
"Time out. There's no shares. It's the gang's money. It was obtained by gang activities. It's exclusively for the gang, and it's the leader's prerogative as to how it's used. Jeff knows that better than anyone because he's the one who set the rules. Ain't that right, Jeff?"
"I never put him in charge of it," Jeff told the others. "He only has it because it was easier for him to make the deposits after he fenced the stuff."
"Yeah, well, timing is everything. I'm the leader now, so it's up to me how the money's used."
Mick took another drag from a cigarette and exhaled in Jeff's general direction.
"Now, it's really sweet that Crazy Legs and Bumbles want to help you out like that. But it doesn't make much sense to lend money to someone who's literally 10 minutes away from skipping town. Sorry."
"Aw, Mick, cut him some slack,"
Crazy Legs said.
"The answer's no. Case closed and a discussion,"
Mick replied. "Fine." Jeff stormed down the hallway past Bumbles and yanked open the garage door. "Just remember whose name is on that account. You'll never see a dime of that money once I'm gone." He slammed the door shut behind him and walked to the garage bay door, reaching down and rolling it open overhead. Rain pelted the driveway with large splashing drops, and he stared despondently at the water rushing down toward the gutter, wondering what to do next. At the very least, he needed to leave Salisbury, so he turned back to the Camaro with his keys in hand, only to see Bumble standing in the doorway of the basement entrance.
"Mick's getting the bank book,"
his friend said.
"You must have convinced him."
Jeff smiled faintly as he followed Bumbles back into the house again. They returned to the entertainment room where Denny and Axel continued to shoot pool, and Crazy Legs flicked through the stations on the television set. No one seemed surprised at his return.
"Might as well get comfortable,"
Axel said.
"He'll probably be a few minutes. If you've seen his room, you'd know why."
Denny sank a ball into a side pocket and slid behind the cue ball for another shot.
Who the hell still uses a bank book anyway?
My dad opened that account for me when I was 10, and I just never closed it out. It came in handy for the hurricanes when we needed an account.
Until now,
Axel said. Denny pocketed another ball without looking up.
Shit, there ought to be $1 million in there by now.
No such luck. Jeff glanced about the room. Where's TJ and Brain?
School,
Axel said.
TJ's got basketball tryouts today. Brain was rambling something about wanting an education.
Go figure,
Denny said. Crazy Legs spun about in the recliner and gestured back toward the TV.
Looks like a good day to hang inside. We're gonna get drenched.
Jeff stepped up for a better view. A radar map displayed a mass of dark green shades sweeping toward their location. Like I need a weatherman to tell me it's raining outside, he said. Suddenly, the TV emitted a loud beep, and the screen cut to a blonde anchorwoman sitting behind a news desk with a picture of a familiar teenage girl set beside her.
An Amber Alert has been issued for a missing Salisbury girl. Cindy Willis was last seen by her parents at their home at 5 p.m. last night. She is the daughter of Salisbury Police Chief Matthew Willis, a candidate for county sheriff in next week's municipal election.
Crazy Legs frowned.
Jeff?
Shut up! Jeff grabbed the TV remote from his friend's hand and punched the volume up 10 notches while the other hurricanes gathered behind him. The inset picture flicked from Cindy's photograph to one of Jeff in a jacket and tie as the anchorwoman continued.
Police are seeking 18-year-old Jeffrey Hollister as a person of interest in Miss Wellis's disappearance. Hollister is the reputed gang leader who was injured in a knife attack at Salisbury High School last Monday. Rick Flynn is at the Salisbury Public Safety Complex with more on the story. Rick?
The image cut to the young reporter standing beside a familiar plainclothes detective on the front sidewalk of the public safety complex.
Thanks, Melissa,
he said into a microphone.
I'm here with Detective Dan Shelnick of the Salisbury PD. Detective Shelnick, it's been reported that a motorboat registered to Chief Wellis was found abandoned and burning on Almond Lake in Portland last night. Is there any connection between that incident and his daughter's reported disappearance?
Detective Shelnick cleared his throat as the camera and microphone turned to him.
I'm not at liberty to comment on that at the moment. I can say that Hollister is also wanted for questioning in a knife assault that seriously injured a rival gang member Wednesday night. He may also possess one or both of the sidearms stolen from Salisbury police officers last week.
That's not fair,
Bumbles cried.
They know it wasn't you.
Jeff scratched his chin. Happy Jack isn't dead? Crazy Legs shook his head, but his eyes remained fixed on the screen as it flashed back to the reporter.
All this with the police chief locked in a tight race for county sheriff,
the reporter commented.
How's he holding up?
Detective Shelnick's expression eased.
We're confident that Cindy will be located soon so that the Wellis family can quickly put this ordeal behind them.
The reporter faced the camera again.
Plenty of cause for concern, but hoping for the best. Rick Flynn, live from Salisbury. Back to you, Melissa.
The shot returned to the anchorwoman behind the news desk, with pictures of Jeff and Cindy juxtaposed beside each other.
Thanks, Rick. Hollister is considered armed and extremely dangerous. Anyone with knowledge of his whereabouts or that of Cindy Wellis is asked to contact the Salisbury Police Department immediately. Stay tuned for more on this developing story. I'm Melissa Weiss, WCRT News. We'll be right back.
The program switched to a commercial, and Jeff muted the volume before dropping the remote into Crazy Legs' lap. Denny turned toward Jeff with a quizzical look.
Where'd they get that mugshot?
It's my yearbook picture. Jeff glanced about the room. I gotta get out of here. Crazy Legs tossed the remote aside.
Jeff, what the hell is going on?
We were on the boat last night. Curly and JJ attacked us with a Molotov cocktail. The boat burned up, but we got away and swam ashore. Cindy was really pissed. She ditched me and took off. I have no idea where she is now. Axel gasped.
Curly ambushed you? Does Mick know?
The hurricane leader strolled back into the room, still shirtless, with the bank book in his hand.
Does Mick know what?
Curly attacked Jeff and Cindy last night,
Axel replied.
Really?
Mick looked Jeff up and down.
He seems okay to me.
I gotta go, Jeff said. That story's been all over town by now. Everyone will be looking for me. Crazy Legs rose from the recliner.
I don't think so. I've been monitoring the news all morning, and that's the first I've seen of it.
Denny laughed.
Monitoring the news? You've been lying around in your fancy sweatpants watching sports all morning.
Crazy Legs looked down at his matching gray pants and jacket.
It's running gear. I'm in training, you know.
Jeff turned to Mick and reached for the bank book. Thanks, man. Mick pulled it back.
Whoa, not so fast. You get 200 bucks plus the 100 bucks that was already in there. That's your share, if you want to call it that.
I said he can have mine.
Crazy Legs cut in, and Bumbles nodded in agreement. Mick glared at them for a long moment before looking back to Jeff again.
Okay, keep 200 for each of them. If you stiff me, their asses are on the line for it.
Jeff held out his hand again. I won't.
What about the rest of it? How do I know you'll come back?
I guess you'll just have to take my word for it. Mick shook his head.
Sorry, Jeff. Your word ain't good enough anymore.
Jeff bristled. Then send someone with me. I'll take Crazy Legs.
I'm not sending one of my men out there with you. It's too dangerous.
Okay, you tell me. Mick scratched his chin.
Give me some collateral.
Jeff laughed in disbelief. Collateral? Like what?
Your keys will do just fine.
My car keys? Are you crazy? You expect me to walk to the stores?
Why not? We've done it hundreds of times.
Jeff sputtered in exasperation as Crazy Legs ambled up to his side.
Mick, every cop in town will be looking for him. Not to mention it's pouring rain outside.
Yeah, Mick. Don't be such a ball buster,
Axel added.
The cops are looking for his car,
Mick told them. He turned back to Jeff with a cunning grin.
I'm doing him a favor by keeping it safe in my garage. And who cares about the rain?
Some favor. Jeff slammed his car keys onto the pool table and snatched the bank book out of Mick's hand. Thanks for nothing.
Take out all the money and bring me back a grand.
Mick picked up the keys and jingled them for a second before stuffing them in his pocket.
Don't be gone long.
Kiss my ass, Mick. Jeff stomped past the pool table to the back door. But he stopped at the window to gaze out into the deluge of rainwater flooding the yard. He pulled his sweatshirt hood over his head before stepping out into the weather and slamming the door shut behind him. Mick pulled the towel from his neck.
I'm gonna take a shower. You guys keep your eyes out for cops, and I don't want you hanging down here playing pool all day.
He turned and headed for the staircase again, while the Hurricanes stepped to the back window to watch Jeff walk across the backyard. Until the driving rain swallowed him from view. A thin wooden door rattled shut, stirring Cindy from a fitful sleep. She blinked her eyes open to face the ragged cushion of an old beige couch with a whiff of mildew in her nostrils. Her hair was in her face, but as she lifted her hands to brush it away, she discovered her wrists were bound together by gray duct tape, with her ankles constrained similarly. Beyond the mustiness of the couch, she could smell the aroma of hickory smoke wafting from a crackling fireplace centered in the back wall of the rudimentary cabin. JJ stood at the thin door, flicking a wall switch up and down and watching a bare bulb attached to the ceiling as it blinked on and off.
We have electricity,
he announced. Curly sat at a plain wooden table in the center of the room, cleaning his revolver with a rag amid a handful of bullets scattered on the tabletop.
What do we need electricity for?
He asked without looking up.
I don't know. Light?
JJ flicked the switch up one last time to leave the bulb lit.
The main breaker was shut off. I think I fixed the fence, too.
Finally, Curly looked up with interest.
How'd you do that?
I jumped the key switch on the control panel. I think it worked because the power light came on. I'm gonna go check it out.
JJ grabbed his tornado jacket from the fireplace hearth and moved toward the knotty front door, Cindy shut her eyes again and feigned sleep as he strode past her. The heavy front door creaked open, momentarily amplifying the din of the rainfall upon the leaves while a cold breeze quickly chilled the room.
It's friggin' pouring out here,
he said as he flipped up his jacket collar. He stepped out onto the covered porch and latched the door shut behind him. Cindy lay still on the couch, listening as his cowboy boots clomped to the end of the wooden porch before turning her head slowly and cracking an eyelid open to study her other captors sitting at the simple table. Meticulously, Curly wiped each cylinder of the revolver with a cloth, and when he was finished, he laid the gun on the table and pushed his chair back, scraping its wooden feet across the hardwood floor as he stood. She squeezed her eyes shut as he stepped in her direction. He stopped and hovered over her for a long moment before kicking the leg of the couch.
Wake up! Today's your lucky day.
She opened her eyes and drew a startled breath as if he had surprised her. Then she swung her feet off the couch and wriggled into a sitting position to finally see the entirety of the austere cabin. The couch, the table, and its four wooden chairs were the only furnishings inside the long room, dimly lit by the ceiling bulb, but more by the murky daylight peeking through the front casement windows. Across the room, a half dozen logs of hickory and oak were stacked upon a brown throw rug, with the tip of a hatchet buried in the bark of the top log. The fireplace glowed with embers of logs that had burned all night, drying her captor's boots and jackets on the warm gray stones of its hearth. In the center of the far wall, a sliding wooden hatchway implied the cabin's former function as a weighing station for the mining company's trucks, while the wall behind her was windowless and unremarkable before a solar wall clock that seemed reasonably correct. In the corner nearest the clock, a rudimentary wooden ladder was affixed to the adjacent wall, leading up to a loft through an open hole in the ceiling. Cindy could not keep her teeth from chattering, for her clothes were still damp from her plunge into the lake.
You know, my father's the chief of police, she began.
I don't care if he's the Prince of Wales, Curly snapped. You're not here because of who your father is. You're here because of who your boyfriend is.
She looked away.
Jeff's not my boyfriend anymore. We had a falling out last night.
Ah, oh, really?
Curly nodded in the direction of the lake.
Well, you better hope he comes for you, or you might have a falling out off that cliff out there.
JJ burst into the cabin, shaking the water from his hair as he shut the door behind him.
Man, it's crazy raining out.
Curly returned to the table and reached for the revolver again.
So, does it work?
JJ smiled proudly.
Sure does. I got a nice little zap from it.
Curly peered through the chambers of the cylinder and blew through one of the holes before inserting a bullet into it. He repeated the routine 3 times before snapping the chamber back into the revolver.
So how's Hollister supposed to find us now?
JJ sat down at the table before opening a shallow drawer and fishing through its contents. He pulled out a deck of cards and slid the drawer shut again.
He'll find a way, you know him,
he said without looking up.
Everyone else can stay out.
Curly glared at him.
Well, whatever you did, you're going to have to undo it.
What for?
I have to go get the truck.
JJ shuffled the deck and began to deal a game of solitaire.
Can't we take care of Hollister first?
Curly nodded.
Sure. Give me your phone, and I'll call him right now.
JJ glared up at his lieutenant.
I told you I lost it in the lake last night, remember?
No shit, dumbass. You just couldn't leave it on shore, could you? I left mine in the truck, remember?
Oh.
JJ gestured to Cindy.
What about her? Does she have a phone on her?
She glowered at JJ through long strands of straggly brown hair.
Do I look like I have a phone on me?
Curly smirked.
Hey now. Be a good girl, and maybe you'll make it through this. Just because your boyfriend is going to die doesn't mean you have to.
He's not my boyfriend anymore! He's 300 miles away from here by now. Your sick little plan isn't gonna work.
The smirk on Curly's lips faded into an ugly grimace, and his pupils began to shift rapidly from side to side.
That's not good.
He stood up from the table and stepped toward the couch again, aiming the revolver directly at her.
That's not good for you at all.
Cindy cringed at the sight of his finger twitching on the trigger of the revolver. He pulled the trigger back, but the hammer simply clicked upon the pin without firing a bullet, while she screamed in terror and recoiled on the couch. JJ hopped to his feet.
What are you doing? You can't kill her. We need her to get Hollister.
Curly whirled about wide-eyed and strode toward his partner with the gun aimed at his chest.
Shut up!
JJ fell backward over his chair and crashed to the floor with his hands stretched out in defense.
Curly, don't.
Curly's nostrils flared with a long, deep breath, and he exhaled slowly through his mouth until the crazed gleam in his eyes subsided.
I can do whatever I want. Don't forget it.
JJ quickly stood up and righted his chair.
I didn't mean nothing by it.
Curly straightened up and stepped to the fireplace, slipping the revolver into his waistband before taking his tornado jacket from the hearth. He pulled the jacket on as he stepped to the couch to look down at Cindy.
Hey, what do you know? It really is your lucky day.
She cowered against the couch with her lip trembling.
Go away.
Curly turned to JJ.
Here's how it's gonna go. You're gonna shut off the fence now and give me 15 minutes to get over it. Then you're gonna turn it back on so we don't get any surprises. I'll take the canoe across the lake and call Hollister from my truck.
I scoped out the lake a little while ago. There's some kind of cop boat out there.
Whatever. Anyone comes near me, I shoot him.
Curly pointed at the wall clock.
It's 9:45 now. You need to shut the fence off again 1 hour from now so I can get back in. Then turn it back on at 11. If Hollister's not here by noon, we'll wrap things up here and hit the road.
You got it.
JJ rushed to the cellar door and cast it fully open, allowing it to rattle against the wall as he dashed down the wooden stairs into the basement again. Curly smirked at his accomplice's newfound obedience. He stepped across the room and opened the front door before turning back to Cindy.
You better hope Hollister's still around,
he warned her.
And that he still gives a damn about you.
He yanked the front door open and stepped out onto the porch, slamming it shut behind him, to leave her sobbing on the musty couch inside the gloomy cabin.